Morning, Mr. Metzger. The place you are looking at is a bunker located in north central Indiana. It is right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern. Also nearby and out back is Terrible Tommy's Weapons of Mass Destruction Used Equipment Yard. Your mission, Tom, should you decide to accept it, is to enter the bunker and broadcast an internet radio show on the Insurgent Radio Network. While broadcasting, you are to supply information to the listeners on the big website, resist.com. As always, should you or any of your insurgency force be caught or killed, Echo will disavow any knowledge of your actions. This tape will self-destruct in 5 seconds. Good luck, Tom.
Well, here we are once more, boys and girls, in the bunker right down here deep in the ground below that rich soil of northern Indiana, where the corn and the wheat and the oats and the rye and sweet corn and tomatoes and all that kind of stuff going to be coming up pretty soon. You know, one thing I get a kick out of, when I go to a shopping center or stores downtown, always in the spring, I see a lot more little white babies. White babies all over the place, just as cute as a button. How about that? So, do you notice that? And don't ignore it, because that's, if you have a future, that's it. Yeah, and we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your snail mail or your donations for the radio show or your donations for any of our other projects that we're hard at work on. And I can relate to you that yesterday and today's mail is sent out a $25 money order to David Tate and a $25 money order to our good buddy Richard Scutari. So we're not forgetting about those boys, and don't you forget about them either. Got to get me another money order for Matt Hale and one for our good buddy down in Florida. And that's Richard Loeb down in Florida. Of course, Richard Scutari is down there in Florida, too, as you can see by going to the addresses on the website. And there's nothing to stop you from sending a donation to these boys yourself through the proper channels, or a book, or a subscription to a magazine. I just sent a subscription to Mother Jones to Richard Scutari from all of you and me and all the lone wolves out there. So it's something that's really positive that you can do without leaving your home. Well, paperbacks are no problem sending them in, but if you got a hardback book that you'd like to send somebody, well, just rip the covers off and they'll go as paperback. So that seems to be the trick that works. It's those hard covers they worry about, people trying to smuggle in drugs, because they smuggle drugs in a million ways into these prisons. Well, I caught a little blurb this morning out of Missouri, some comments about Glenn Miller, and went by several names, I guess, the way it sounds. And I'm not going to edit them out, because I don't do things that way. Any kind of positive comment that makes sense, I'll put it on the show. So here we go. Let's go out to Missouri.
Secret Fraser Glenn Miller has strong beliefs. In fact, many people here in Marionville say he would talk about white supremacy at gas stations and restaurants. But people here say they didn't think anything of it until he was connected to a crime.
He was not shy. That's one thing. He was not a shy person at all. He spoke his opinion, which, you know, you can respect that at least. You may not like his opinion, but at least you knew it. You knew exactly where you stood with him.
He was always nice and friendly and respectful of elder people. You know, he respected his elders greatly, as long as they were the same color as him.
Marionville's mayor, Dan Clevenger, owns a repair shop. He's known Fraser Miller for years, but not always by that name.
When I first met him, he called himself Fraser Mays. I think that was spelled M-A-I-S, if I remember right. And then all of a sudden he started calling himself Fraser Miller.
Despite the name change, Clevenger says Miller's biased beliefs stayed strong.
I kind of agreed with him on some things, but I don't like to express that too much.
That hasn't always been the case. Nearly a decade ago, Clevenger wrote this letter to the editor, calling Frazier a friend and wanting to spread Miller's warnings. He spoke of the Jew-run medical industry that, quote, made a few Jews rich by killing us off. He also mentions the Jew-run government. 10 years later, Clevenger's views haven't seemed to change.
There's some things going on in this country that's destroying us. We've got a false economy, and it's some of those corporations are run by Jews because the names are there.
After prosecutors charged Miller, now with a new last name of Cross, with murder, Clevenger says his opinion of his friend has changed.
It was shocking that he would do something like that, but knowing him and how much was built up inside of him, that, you know, I can understand why he would be the one to do that. I think it's terrible what he did. He didn't have any right to do that. And I think he should pay with his life.
People around here aren't going to stop talking about Frazier Glenn Miller anytime soon. But friends say that's probably how he wants it, so he can continue to spread his message, even while he's in jail. Lee?
Well, I imagine that other name he was using had to do with his witness protection program that he was under after he worked for the FBI. You know, there was one story I've told before, but not lately, and that was way back when Morris Dees got a special order from the court to stop Miller from doing his paramilitary training that he was doing down there in the hills. And after Miller had agreed to this, it was called a consent decree, and he left the courtroom, Dees came up to him and said, "Are you going this way or that way or something?" And he says, "I need a ride to the airport." Can you believe Glenn Miller give Morris Dees a ride to the airport after Dees had just screwed him? Well, it sounded like the way he was comporting himself in that little town in Missouri, he could have kept right on that way and influenced a hell of a lot of good people. And sounds like he did influence quite a few people. But when you go off totally half-cocked like that, it causes distrust of anybody who has racial views and expresses them, because they don't know when the hell you're going to explode and do something crazy. So you just have to stick to the good old boy type situation here and not get wrapped too tight. And a lot of guys in the right wing are the white nationalist stuff that are wrapped way too tight. I've known quite a number of people who call themselves national socialists who are wrapped very tight, had very few friends, stuck to themselves, and just wrapped way too tight. And you can't, well, you can do that, but you're liable to explode like Miller did. And you don't need that, because that's a soldier out of the battle. I don't consider Miller a legitimate soldier, but you know what I mean. Other people who are legitimate, who have a good rapport with the people around them in their community, and on first name basis with most people they meet, I know I am around here, keep it that way. That's exactly the way you want it. You don't want to screw that up. Well, here's another little note on the subject. On the shooting deaths of three people in Kansas City yesterday by alleged white supremacists, Frazier Glenn Cross, which must have been his FBI cover witness program name. Here is the real skinny on Cross, who just so happens to be a federal rat. Well, why wasn't this listened to before? Instead of calling me names for telling people he was a rat. Was in all likelihood at the time of these shootings a federal witness protection program. the following revelation. Well, no, he wasn't in the witness protection program at this time. He hasn't been for quite a while. He got out, he just walked out of it. The following revelations are made by attorney Kirk Lyons, who defended the accused in the Fort Smith sedition trial in Fort Smith, Arkansas, in 1988, where Glenn Miller, alias Cross, testified against the defendants as a federal witness. This missive was sent to me by my good friend Louis Beam, one of the defendants at Fort Smith. All of the defendants in that trial were subsequently acquitted, despite Miller's lies and false witness. Now just remember, if they'd have been convicted, they'd have been given 30, 40 years, like the order members. This shooting is just another case of the federals, run by their Jew masters, performing the act and then projecting the guilt into the desired target. Get the picture yet? Yeah. Righto. Yeah, they got him. He's in their hands. He's doing their FBI work. And then when he bolts and does something like this, all of a sudden the guilt goes back on everybody who's involved in the white struggle. Okay? It's very clever the way they manipulate things. Going along with that idea of digging in and making associates and friends around your community when you move into a relatively strange community, even though I was born here in Warsaw, Indiana. But even when the phony ATF thing came up, where the ATF raided my house, turning it upside down looking for bombs, I guess. And even after that, the people around, they said, well, wait a minute. If your house was turned upside down and all these ATF people came in and you weren't arrested, there's something fishy. So the people have some common sense around to where they say, wait a minute, that don't sound right to me. How many times do you hear of an ATF or FBI raid, turn a guy's house upside down, and they don't arrest him and drag him away? Very few times. You know, I see on some website here, and I passed it along, someone said, the only person I've ever actually heard identify himself as a racist is Tom Metzger. Well, yes, I identify myself as a white racist, because racist is a term that's understandable. It means that you believe there is such a thing as different races, as your race and other races, black race, Asian races and so forth. So you understand that, respect that, and you are specifically interested in the well-being of your own race, just like you'd be interested in the well-being of your family, your wife and your kids and so forth. So what's so hard to understand about that? And why is it that we have so many people who claim to be white power, whatever, who don't want to say the word racist because their enemy uses it? Well, I'm not going to quit using the idea of race just because the enemy uses it. Anytime anybody asks me around where I live or on the phone or anyplace else, are you a racist? I smile and say, of course. I care about my race. Now, what's wrong with that? And if I'm talking to a non-white, a black, I said, well, don't you care about your race? Isn't your race important to you? I haven't found one yet that said, no, my race isn't important to me. So why do we have all these people running around calling themselves white nationalists and white patriots and white Christians, and on it goes? Or they try to round it off with racialist, which is about the same meaning, but they try to soften it up a little, like maybe people won't hate them as much if they say they're a white racialist. So anyhow, I don't know what to tell you, but I'll tell you one thing. If you deny that you're a racist, which is somebody who's primarily interested in the best interests of their race, well, I'm worried about you when the heat goes down. And I'm not I'm a white, but I'm not a nationalist. No, I feel a comradeship with white people all over the world. When I see the white Canadians, I don't see a border. When I see white Russians and Englishmen and so forth, all the other countries, white Spanish and all that, people down in South America that are white, I don't see borders. This is a worldwide situation. Sometimes we call it pan-Aryanism, or maybe you want to call it pan-whiteism, as our friend from the COT used to always say. He didn't want to use Aryan, because sometimes Aryan gets into a big, long, detailed argument, and everybody comes up being right, and everybody comes up being wrong. Even though I believe that there is definitely evidence of an Aryan race, but for the common man and most people, white is good enough. White internationalism, because if you think that we're going to win this thing all by ourselves here as nationalists in North America, you're wrong. We're going to need white people pulling all over the world. And we get wiped out here, we may have to go to another part of the world and reemerge. That's why young people should be always prepared and learning different languages of other basically white countries. Because you may need to go there or you may want to go there. You know, Craig Cobb was talking about Estonia and how he was building a house over there at one time, how beautiful the women were in Estonia over that way. And I've seen some of the street television footage from off the street, and it'd be pretty hard to beat, just like when I was working way back in 76 for David Duke's first campaign for state senate in Baton Rouge. I don't know whether it's the water or what, because they have naturally filtered through limestone water there that they don't put chemicals in it. And I swear the most beautiful women I'd ever seen were around there in Baton Rouge. Now, of course, that's a long time ago. A lot of things have happened since then. And I sure hate to think of those beautiful white women I used to see down there, arm in arm with a, let's face it, a gorilla looking black. And are you embarrassed to say that? Well, I'm not. And I don't do it necessarily to be mean to black people, but there are black people who have similarities to the apes, monkeys, and so forth, and you can see it in their face. You certainly don't see it in the face of a pure white Aryan Swede. You don't see it in a real white person. You don't see that vestiges of a gorilla, even if it was white skin. The only race you see it in is primarily the black race. Yeah, so I can't tell a lie. You know, people say, don't ever lie. Well, I don't. I tell the truth as I see it right on the spot. And it's made my life a lot better for it, because I don't have to go back and tell 25 other lies to get around the first lie. Now, always telling the straight truth as you see it is not always the most comfortable thing. It can cause you some pain, too. You got to be prepared for that. But in the long run, you'll sleep well and you'll feel better about yourself and so forth if you tell the truth. Like when a black person says to me, do you hate me? I say, well, not knowing anything about you, no, I don't hate you. There may be, if I knew everything about you, there may be a reason I might hate you. If you've done something to hurt white people. But the main thing is we just want to be separate. We're separatists. I'm a separatist. I don't know what everybody else is. I can only speak for myself. Every time I try to speak for somebody else, I get my ass in trouble. My opinion is the only one I'm technically authorized to give. Simple as that. Well, I see the military-industrial complex is at it again. Yep. A U.S. Army general, a war criminal, I think they all are, has denied clemency for Chelsea Manning and upheld the former soldier's 35-year prison sentence for providing alleged secret files to WikiLeaks in the biggest breach of classified materials in U.S. history. Well, you got to understand that every time any piece of paper comes into Washington, it's automatically stamped national security. So even toilet paper, I think, has national security on it. The Army said on Monday, Major General Jeffrey S. Buchanan, whose grandfather fought at Chickamauga, or great-grandfather, probably. Usually these generals, they got a story like that. They murdered people at Chickamauga. Oh no, I was defending my country. Decision to uphold the findings of Manning's 2013 court-martial will automatically send the case to the Army Court of Criminal Appeals. You know, these in-house courts in the military are funny. I know something about them. An Army statement said, the soldier formerly known as Bradley Manning was working as an intelligence analyst in Baghdad in 2010 when the person gave the pro-transparency site WikiLeaks 700,000 documents, videos, diplomatic cables, and battlefield accounts of the rotten, genocidal, war criminal activities of the United States military-industrial corporate group. Yeah. A criminal military-industrial complex corporate group that now rules the country. And we're waging, what did they call it in Nuremberg? Not genocidal, but some kind of illegal war or something like that. Everybody that was at the top at the time of the Iraq War, and even under Clinton in the Balkans, they're all guilty under the Nuremberg laws. The Nuremberg laws were supposed to keep going, not just go after the Germans. Nuremberg laws were supposed to be forever. So this Manning, who is a hero, and if the right-wing conservative sons of bitches don't like it, they can shove it because I say this person is a hero. And Snowden's a hero. Anybody that tries to get the truth out on the criminality and the Bush crime family and all those people and that bastard Cheney, anybody who squeals on him is my hero. It's got nothing to do with right, left, middle, or what. Not even race. The trove included a 2007 video of the U.S. Apache helicopter firing at unsuspecting people in Iraq, killing a dozen people, including two Reuters news staffers. And I suppose you saw that. So they're giving a guy 35 years for spilling the beans on straight out execution murder, and yet they're all excited about Glenn Miller, who wipes out three people. That's bad. Three innocent people wiped out, but these people wiped out 10. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, where hundreds of thousands of Iraqis were murdered. Don't you understand? You're living in an insane asylum. It's One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest all over again, all every day. I mean, it's unbelievable. Manning pleaded guilty to 10 charges, but was convicted last year of 20 counts, including espionage and theft. He or she was found not guilty of the most serious charge, aiding the enemy. Aiding the enemy? No, he was not aiding the enemy. He was screwing the enemy. The enemy was not in Iraq. The enemy was not in Saddam Hussein. The enemy was in Washington, D.C., the Congress, the Senate, Wall Street, and all of them. Aiding the enemy. Manning's request for leniency followed an application for a presidential pardon filed last September. Well, Obanco, he couldn't do that because his tits in a ringer, too. He's killing off people with drones and all the people who've died in Afghanistan since it's been on his watch. Just another war criminal. You know, they'll give you a black one, they'll give you a white one, they'll give you a yellow one, they'll give you a brown one, they'll give you a red one. Where her or his defense team maintained that they're saying she had released information to the media for the public good. Manning's sentence was the longest ever handed down for turning over secrets to the media. Well, what we need is more and more people to do that. I mean, if you're out there and you got access to criminal evidence of the system, no matter whether you're a county official, a state official, a federal official, a military official, let it go, baby. Turn it loose. Cover your ass as best you can. If I had any goddamn secrets here, I mean real secrets, I'd release them on the front steps of the downtown courthouse. Then I'd take my pants down and show my bare ass to the media. The only patriot now is the patriot is against La Cesspool Grande. I hate the word patriot because it's so misused. They call these, a lot of these congressmen and senators patriots, and they pin medals on non-deserving people, and they call them patriots. Shit. That's why I don't like the term. All the worst rats seem to be called patriots. Talk a little bit about this hubbub out there in Nevada, the rancher. And, you know, I get a little pushback every now and then. Some of it's deserved, and I have to rethink things. And I'm not afraid to admit that that I sometimes jump to a conclusion. But on the other hand, this whole thing of the government owning millions of acres, having control of millions of acres, is not the way this country was set up to be. On the other hand, I worry about if there wasn't some kind of government control over large amounts of land, land that's pretty much unproducible, I wonder how many capitalist corporations would be in there cutting it up and dividing it up and fracking everything and whatever comes along. I mean, you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. You know the government's crooked because the government's crooked by corruption that's injected into the government by the predatory capitalists and their corporations. So it's almost like if you go one way, you're wrong. If you go the other way, you're wrong. It's hard to have an even keel. Well, I make it a rule myself. I don't get too worried about somebody who's a millionaire. I figure they can pretty well take care of themselves. I remember Perot, when he ran for president, he'd get on TV and say, I feel your pain. And then it comes out that he had $9 billion in the bank. But he feels my pain. don't let anybody ever tell you they feel your pain if they got over $1 million in the bank. So this rancher out there, he's a millionaire and got a lot of good working people going there to defend him. But I think what the problem was that he had the money for the best attorneys in the country. And any lawyer will tell you that if you go into court, you should have a good attorney. I know all about attorneys. Don't tell me about attorneys. But I've had some good ones that have saved my ass. And if I'd have been able to hire one in the civil trial in Portland, I never would have been found liable civilly, because a really good attorney would have got me off no problem. But I couldn't buy one. I couldn't afford one. Like, one of them called me up and said, "Well, look, I want $100,000. I'll get you out of this mess." I said, "Well, I don't have $100,000. I don't know where I can get $100,000." He said, "Well, I'm a hired gun, and I'll do the job for you, but I got to have the money." And so I said, thanks a lot. Goodbye. actually, I didn't. If I'd had $100,000 and give some attorney $100,000, and they got a hold of my house, which only sold for $125,000, I wouldn't be hardly any ahead at all. So, tails you win, heads you lose. Tails you lose both ways. So anyhow, where was I? So I think that my critic was right that I just should stay out of this deal, because I see all the right wingers, all the white nationalists, and all the conservatives are going crazy. And whenever I see Sean, what's his name, on Fox TV, anyhow, I got a mental blank on that little bastard. Hannity. I despise that little bastard, just like a lot of the progressives despise him. He's playing it up. Since you got a black president, a Democrat president, anything that happens like this, the conservatives, the neocons, the Hannitys, all those kind of people, all those talking heads are going to come down and supposedly support the poor rancher, who's a millionaire, of course, and go crazy, because anything that it's sort of like, remember Leo DeRocha used to, with the Brooklyn Dodgers, he'd get pissed off at a call by a umpire, which is a correct call, and he'd go up and he'd kick dirt all over the shoes of the umpire until they kick him out of the game. Well, that's what these Republicans do. Since you got a Democratic president and a black president, and they can cloak their capitalist racism under false pretenses, and they want, anytime anything happens, they want to kick all kinds of dirt on the umpire's feet. So anytime there's anything that's going to rise up between now and the time Obama leaves office, anything, they're going to jump into. So they've all these neocons are right wing, and they've got half of the white nationalists into it too. Oh, the poor rancher. When if he'd have got a good attorney way back, and sit down and said, "Look, I don't know how much they raised the price on the grazing fees. Now, did they double and triple them? If they did, I think with a good attorney, he'd have had a good case to get it tossed out, or at least kept the grazing fees about the same as they were in the very beginning. But when he pled his case himself and just walked away and said, "I'm not going to pay," I tried that back in 71 when I refused to pay federal income taxes to support the Vietnam War. Well, it didn't get me too far, because they were on my ass big time and seized my house once, but I got it back. Then they seized it again, I got it back. And I finally decided fighting the feds using their rules, you'll never win. That's why almost anything that's classed as rules about dealing with the feds, I don't have anything to do with, including now voting. I mean, whether you want to just quit paying taxes, I knew a whole lot of people that got burnt real bad. A lot of them did prison time. Honest, good people. And some of them died, you know, fighting the feds over taxes. I remember Arthur Kirk, who was shot down for defending his farm against the tax people and so forth. So you got to fight a different way. You got to fight it your way. You can't use the government's rules to fight the government. Bastiat, in his writings, the Frenchman, talked about that way back in the 1700s, I believe, when he said, if you think you can use the gendarmes of the court, the police at the door to fight the court, you're crazy. That wasn't his exact word, but that's what he meant. If you're going to use the... You know, I can see coming into Chicago back in the 20s and saying, I want to fight Al Capone. Let's see. I'll use his rules, okay? And, of course, he had 100 times more gunmen than you do. You come into town with one horse and one .44, I'm going to take care of that Al Capone, and he wipes you out. So you can't use the enemy's methods, usually. You can use them to harass them, maybe, but you don't get too far. So anyhow, old Tommy, the old lone wolf out here in the countryside, he's backing away from the rancher out there in Nevada. And I have feelings on both sides of the issue. But I'm not going to commit myself to either side. So anyhow, that's the way I see it. And you so-called white nationalists out there better think it over before you jump on one side. Just because it's an anti-government thing don't mean it's a good cause to jump into. Or who are you really serving? And in this case, I think by jumping into this thing really big time, some people could get hurt really bad and killed, and it's a dangerous game. And I'm afraid I'm going to have to let millionaires fight their own battles, because there's no millionaire ever came to my aid. No millionaire at all ever offered to assist me in my troubles down through the years. And certainly Mr. Perot never did.
In 79 A.D., Pompeii was buried in ash by eruption. Now, nearly 2,000 years later, an eruption of hot legislative ash is spewing from Representative Mike Pompeo, threatening to gag consumers with gas and ash. Pompeo is the right-wing Congress critter from the ideological Republic of Kokistan, a longtime employee and lackey of the Koch brothers. This Republican from Wichita, Kansas, became the billionaire brother's personal congressman in 2010 when Koch money squeegeed him into a House seat. A Koch Industries lawyer was even dispatched to run his office, and Mike dutifully mouths the company line in Washington. But in early April, with pressure building up within him to do a major favor for his patrons, Mount Pompeo blew. He became the lead sponsor of an industry-written bill that meets both the ideological and profiteering goals of Koch Industries, Monsanto, and the Grocery Manufacturers of America. Their bill would let brand-name food giants continue deceiving consumers about the use of genetically altered organisms in their food products. More than 90% of consumers want food manufacturers to label any products containing these risky GMOs, so they can decide for themselves whether to buy re-engineered foods. Some 26 states are now considering laws to require these right-to-know labels. So here comes Pompeo, spewing ash and noxious gas, not only to keep families in the dark about what they're eating, but also to snuff out their political rights. His bill bans any state from passing labeling laws and says any federal labeling provision must be voluntary. Also, it usurps the scientific process to declare by legislative fiat that these altered foods are safe and can even be labeled as natural. This is Jim Hightower saying, to keep up with Pompeo's toxic eruptions, go to centerforfoodsafety.org.
Well, I like that good old boy, Jim Hightower. He doesn't agree with us on the race issue, I'm sure. But he's pretty good on a lot of other things. Sort of like that crazy-ass rogue progressive Mike Malloy, who's been going crazy the last few nights. He just despises the National Rifle Association. He makes it sound like everybody out here who's got a gun is all into the National Rifle Association. But we made it clear a long time ago, or I made it clear back before, or back when I belonged to the National Association of Keep and Bear Arms, that the NRA is more interested in selling, being involved in arms to the military and so forth, than they need you. And that's the little dirty little secret behind the NRA. Plus the fact, like I said before, it was a group put together after the Civil War, and actually the first president of it was involved in training blacks to go down south, and training blacks down south to defend themselves from white people, as they said. So the NRA started out as a race-mixed anti-white group. And I think if you peel back enough covers and get all the patriotic language out of the way and get all the fluff out of the way, you're going to find some nefarious activities there. I never trusted the NRA, and I think that the progressives who go crazy about the NRA like it's representing everybody with guns are really doing a disservice. It's sort of setting them up as a straw man, but actually they're not a straw man. The NRA can be dangerous. If I had to depend on the NRA to keep my weapons, I think I'd be in real trouble. One little problem with old Mike Malloy there, he said in his conversation that he had once evidently belonged to the NRA, so he's been tarnished a little bit too way back, I'm telling you. And he was complaining about these neocons and right-wingers using some of his stuff on their websites and then calling him all kinds of names. Of course, I don't do that. I only use material that I think is important for you to know, and I never, as you can see, I don't go into long criticisms on the things that I disagree with Malloy on. So anyhow, I feel I've treated the situation pretty well. I think that there's some right-wingers would go crazy because he's not a racist, and somehow that makes me part of the anti-racist thing, and which I think you people out there who listen to what I say are sophisticated enough to know the difference. Well, somebody sent me a lengthy discourse on how horrible it was to be promoting the lone wolf leaderless resistance concept. Unfortunately, I transferred it from one computer to the other and somehow lost it. I was going to reply to it bit by bit. If anyone out there's got it, send it to me and I'll keep looking for it. But In the article, this comes from, I think, Occidental Observer or something like that, this intellectual or pseudo-intellectual website that goes on and on and on and on and on, and of course some of it's good, but I think people put far too much confidence in pseudo-intellectuals than they do people with boots on the ground. I think they they're enamored with big words and long paragraphs and lengthy tomes into the history of man and all that kind of stuff. When most of the time, you can't prove much after, say, a month ago. before that. What the hell? Anyhow, they came up with a list of names and said, identified them as lone wolves, people who had on their own jumped up and did something pretty dastardly, even by our standards. And not one of them had any adherence to the idea of the lone wolf. They could not possibly have ended up the way they did if they had been adhering to the concept of what I see as a lone wolf. Now, all one has to do is peruse, read through my lone wolf survival guide, which is in plain English. It's not a lot of big words in my stuff. I'm a high school graduate. But I do the best we can. And I used to know, I knew one thing when I was a kid. You know, some of the smartest guys around I knew were old men, farmers, that I would talk to, and they were wise as hell. Most of them had not even finished, sometimes even grade school. My stepfather only went to the eighth grade. But as common sense goes, he was smarter than a whip, as they used to say. So anyhow, I'm not going to go into a big cross my swords with the white nationalists who don't seem to want to call themselves racist, which means they're adhering to the enemy's interpretation of racist and not willing to take them on. I'll say for the Quakers, at least they took them on. The Quaker term was an insult to that particular sect of people way back. And rather than argue, well, the Quakers took on the Quaker name. And they ran with it, and they were successful with it. I have problem with people who cannot say, at least to their friends, or even to my enemies, I mean, you know, I'm a white racist. I don't see any reason why I should couch that in any other terms. I mean, white nationalists, like I say earlier in the show, that got pretty popular. I think Duke started pushing that stuff. And now on his website, I guess you don't even see hardly anything about race at all or something. Somebody was telling me. So anyhow, now if I stopped every day to argue with these people, because I know these are the kind of people that are they're very intelligent, but you know there's intelligent, ignorant people and ignorant, intelligent people. And I know one thing, if and when the shit hits the fan and the guns come out of the Cosmoline and people are running around like a chicken with their head cut off, you're not going to find any of these pseudo-intellectuals around. You're not going to find any of these guys who write these beautiful, long and illustrated articles around. There's hardly ever been an intellectual who made a good revolutionary, at least by the meaning, terminology that most people put on intellectual. Once in a while, there's one that can drop the book and pick up the gun. But most intellectuals aren't worth a damn when it comes to physical fighting or military tactics or anything like that. So they have to rely. I don't care how smart they are and how long a book they wrote and all the fancy words they put into it. It takes a type of a general to take those words and commit them to action. Boots on the ground. So anyhow, they'll keep taking pot shots at my promotions of lone wolf and And Louis Beam, too, same thing. And other people who understand the strength of lone wolf and leaderless resistance. But that's okay, because their organizations and groups are gradually deteriorating. Usually they end up fighting each other to the point where they disappear. So anyhow, that's about all I was really, I guess, going to say about that article anyhow. And if you can get something good out of something like Occidental Observer, well, that you can apply to boots on the ground, fine. But if it's information that has no value to boots on the ground, you might be wasting a lot of your time for nothing, man. I think all those people that do those things, though, financially do pretty well. Yeah, I think, I don't know, was Cardo behind that or not? I don't know. But anyhow, he's behind some of that stuff. Yeah, I think it is the Occidental Quarterly or something. He always has plenty of money, man. As far as I know, he hasn't worked a job in 40, 50 years, a regular job. Always drives nice cars, travels around all over the world. Yeah. I guess that's the job I should have, but I'd have to betray too many of my feelings and ideas to do that. Anyhow, I like straight talk, like Mark Twain, his books that he wrote. And whether we agree or not on a lot of things or not, George Carlin, I like his stuff. I like people who put it straight out there, right in your face. Well, let's look into one of our good books here in the bunker. Might is Right. You've heard of that book, haven't you? Yeah. I'm going to start out on page 63 here to close out the show. But equality before the law is all we mean, whimpers the everlasting sophist, the cunning liar. Let us see by what rational method can any two litigants be placed in a position of unconditional equality before the law. First of all, plaintiff and defendant always possess totally different physical and mental characteristics, different personal magnetisms, and different seized bank balances. Also, all judges, juries, and legal officials are unequals in temperament, ability, courage, and honesty. Each one has his own peculiar idiosyncrasies, prejudices, inferiorities, superstitions, and price. Each, again, may be more or less dishonest, and more or less subject to financial pressure or caste bias. No two men are born alike, each one being literally born under his own particular star, formed of different material, swayed by different ideals, educated and molded in a different mill by a different process. Even if all tribunals of justice were founded upon blind impartiality and administered free of cost, it will be plainly seen that equality before the law remains a mere chimera, a dream, and of no value. Equality before the law is just meaningless catchword, something like the famous Jesuitism, liberty regulated by law. Reminds me of Indira Gandhi, when she was president of India. She headed a government that she said was a guided democracy. I thought that was genius, a guided democracy. Statute law may formally confer equal rights and privileges upon unequal citizens, but it cannot enforce itself. It must execute its mandate through human media, and that media is full up to the brim with superiorities, inferiorities, and inequalities. No legalism has ever been devised that strength cannot drive its coach and four through, and it is a popular proverb in all lands that somehow there is one law for the rich and another for the poor. I'm shocked. Indeed, the poor can never be placed upon an equality with the rich, not even by the pillage of the rich. Whether they are the fittest or not, the present proprietors of wealth should never permit themselves to be plundered without a savage struggle. Yeah, so that shows you what you're going to have to do, Mr. Progressive. You're going to go after them. You're going to have to be really serious. Sooner or later, the hour of the struggle in its acute form shall arrive. But the rich must not dread it. If they prepare in time, the results shall not only justify their mastership, but render it impregnable if they are fit to be respected and secure. Aristocracies must rest themselves upon sordid might, not upon paper credits, consuls, and bond issues. You see, they'll pull all stops when you go for their throat. All legal tribunals are based not upon ideal concepts of justice and fair play, but upon effective armed strength, armies, cops. This is a truism. Robbery under arms laid the cornerstone of every courthouse in Christendom and elsewhere. How then can the robbers and the robbed, the eagle and the pigeon, the chicken and the hawk, be placed in positions of genuine equilibrium before removable officials, specially paid and appointed to vindicate the law? That is to give forcible effect to the dicta of the strongest. All judges are authorized avengers, armed to the teeth, and all hangmen are licensed assassins, trained to kill. These words are not spoken in disparagement. Assassins, avengers, ha! If that be so, truly they who seek the Lord do suffer hunger, but lions seek for prey. When an army of occupation settles down upon an enemy's territory, it issues certain rules of procedure for the orderly transference of property and persons of and the persons conquered into absolute possession and unlimited control by the conquerors. These rules of procedure may first take shape as orders issued by military generals, but after time they develop themselves into statute books, precedents, and constitutions. This has been going on for a long time. Recently we did it in Iraq. Yeah. We moved in, took over, and made the rules. Indeed, all law is now and ever has been the mandate of successful belligerents, or rather the mandate of the few masterful personalities that ever inspired them. Equality before the law is thus a contradiction in terms, for law itself is an incarnation of inequality. It is true only in the subjective sense, that all who obey the law are equally the servants of those who make it or cause it to be made. Drumhead court-martials are really law courts in embryo. Congresses and parliaments are merely committees of rapacious tax gatherers. Legislatures may describe themselves as representatives of the people, but that is only a cunning masquerade. Their chief vocation is to strengthen the law, uphold the Constitution, vote the annual appropriations, like for the military. We've spent $700 billion in Afghanistan already, and we can't fix the roads, can't fix the highways, can't fix the bridges, and don't have any money for poor white people. Oh, boy. And means of exploiting the nation or of permitting it to be systematically looted by their accomplices or their masters. The principles that govern a holdup are the self-same principles that govern government. No government on earth rests on the consent of the governed. Only the stupid think that. And believe me, they're really stupid. Is it reasonable, therefore, for a confederation of masterful bandits to place themselves in position of absolute equality before their intended victims? I don't think so. The idea is absurd on the face of it. Inequality necessitates inequality, and every government on earth is organized and enthroned brigandage. In other words, criminal, a gang, corruption. Centralized. Lacasis, the Spanish Jesuit, was the first in America to spread about the false and subversive, shameful theory of equal human rights. But since his time, it has been boastfully accepted on all sides by vast hordes of witless persons who are in all countries and numerically a majority. Quote, the race of fools, as Plato sagaciously remarked, is not to be counted, not even in this land of the free. Although equality in any shape has never been scientifically proven, nor logically defended, nevertheless it passes from tongue to tongue, from brain to brain. See it on TV, you hear it on the radio, you see it in the movies 24 hours a day. Whoa, equal mean. Taken as the gospel truth. Well, the gospel's fake too. Just as clever counterfeit coins are passed unsuspectingly from hand to hand, the equality superstition is tolerated by clear-seeing men for one reason only. It assists them to govern the thoughts, and by governing the thoughts, to exploit the property, energy, and labor force of their soft-minded, good-natured neighbors who really believe it is true, who think it glad tidings of great joy. Behold, when the fraudulent equality of natural rights evangel is mellifluously poured forth in the marketplace by suave dollar-hunting attorneys and half-educated mechanics, even those staid citizens whose whole life is of it a direct disproof lead the roaring, raving, yelling crowd in its maniacal bellowings. Lo, the angel of lunacy is camped on their souls. Yeah. Lot of logic. Equality. Even got to the all the way down to the equality with the lower animal. How about that? We're so equal, we'll even put a Negro on a pedestal and call him king. Ha ha ha! Well, that's it for today, boys and girls. Now, remember, if I haven't offended you today, you make sure you come back tomorrow and I'll try to figure a new way every day of offending as many people as possible. Because sometimes when people get offended, they get so mad, the blood gets to rushing, they might start thinking a little bit. You suppose?